running away from people now. 20, 10, and gone. Moneal, 67-yard touchdown run.
I've got reporters' notebooks older than Seth.
Fonte was always soft. Can't win on the road, they say.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
This is Orange Nation, brought to you by Charles Heating and Air Conditioning, with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us. Alongside Seth Goldberg, I'm Stephen Fonte. As we welcome you into a Monday edition of Orange Nation. Phone lines are open all of hour number one at 315-437-7644. We have two guests lined up for you in hour number two. Eric Devendorf will join us at 1 o'clock, as he does every Monday throughout the college basketball season. And then coming up at 1:30, we'll have SU's offensive coordinator Mike Lynch on with us. He normally joins us earlier in the show, but he's out on the road recruiting, as SU football is now looking ahead to the 2020 season. A lot to get to. Lots happened, Seth, since the last time we talked. A couple of lopsided losses for the Orange basketball team down in Brooklyn, and one rather surprising victory by the football team inside the Dome on Saturday, 39-30 in overtime over Wake Forest. It was the most drama-filled game of the season, best finish of the season. Not sure it changes the narrative, though, of the season.
No, I think that it might for the time being, right? It might make you feel better about it now. Like today, like Saturday in the moment, you felt better about how that Syracuse football season went than you probably did Friday night or even Saturday as we were doing the pregame show. I think you probably felt better, you know, Saturday around 5 o'clock than you did earlier in the day. But with that being said, it doesn't change all that much, right? This team still only won 5 games, won half as many games as they won a year ago. And, you know, I can look and point out, as we did on the pregame show, hey, they've got four of their five offensive linemen coming back, and that offensive line was playing better, you know, after that second bye week. And Tristan Jackson comes back, who, by the way, quietly had a phenomenal season.
Great season.
Phenomenal season. Taj Harris comes back. Tommy DeVito, Abdul Adams, Jawar Jordan, Jarvion Howard, Andre Sisco, Trill Williams, Ife Melifonwu, all of these guys are back, and that's awesome. There's a lot of young talent. You still took a humongous step back in what you did this year.
No doubt. And, you know, you could put your own spin on this. However, you know, I heard Matt Park talking about this last week, and factually it's correct. I mean, this is, with this win on Saturday to finish at 5-7, it is the second best record for this program in the last 6 years. Like, that's one way to look at it.
That's incredible.
It is, right? Think about that for a second. At 5-7, that is the second best record they've had in the last 6 years, obviously outside of what happened last year. But with that being said, I think it, you know, the other way to look at it is, given the expectations coming into the season, coming off the 10-3 campaign, I think you also have to look at it as one of the most disappointing seasons in recent memory, certainly, you know, maybe even going back last 20 years and beyond, that we can remember, because this was a team that was supposed to, what did we say, the floor is 7 wins, we said, coming into this season. Going back to that very first show we did at the State Fair, when we came back on the air from our summer hiatus, we said 7 wins was the floor. We were obviously very wrong.
Well, and we weren't alone, you know. I don't even mean we, like Syracuse, like media, like we were not alone. I saw earlier
they were ranked
today,
in the top 25 to start the
they
year.
Were in the top 25, and I saw today Joe Giglio, who covers NC State and has a really good grasp, I think, that we both agree on the ACC, and he understands the bowl rankings and tiers and projections better than anybody. He tweeted out his projections from the start of the year, and he gave himself a D. He had Syracuse going 5-3 in league play. He had them only losing to Clemson, FSU, and NC State. And, you know,
that sounds familiar. Yeah, I feel like we had that exact conversation.
Right. I mean, he also joked around like he wants to swap NC State for Louisville, because he had Louisville going 1-7 and NC State going 4-4. But, you know, it's not like Syracuse media was alone in thinking that this Syracuse team was going to be good. It's not like Syracuse fans were going out on a limb in thinking that this team was going to be good. And they ended up going, you know, far below what everybody thought.
I hate
except for Vegas. Vegas knew.
I hate that take that the expectations were unrealistic or the expectations were unfair. Because when you look at where this program was coming out of last season with the 10 wins and the Camping World Bowl victory and all the momentum they had, and yeah, they lost Eric Dungy, but you felt like Tommy DeVito could come in and fill in and do a nice job. And we knew there were questions along the offensive line, but given the schedule, I thought the schedule was easier this year, given the talent they have in the program, and I know you lost Dungy, but you felt really good about your talent at the skill positions, and we've talked about this all season, but I did not feel like the expectations were unfair at all. I feel like this team underachieved. And, you know, to your point, maybe the narrative changes today just a little bit because they got that last one, and they show that they didn't quit. I know that that was a question coming out of the BC game, right? We talked about whether or not the team had quit. And they showed that was not the case. They came back. They played really well against Duke. Even the Louisville game, they showed some fight in that game. I mean, it didn't go their way in the end. But to come out and to beat Wake Forest and to close the year the way they did, again, it changes the narrative a smidge. But I think the overriding theme of this season was this particular team underachieved. And now 2020 becomes a very, very important year for a lot of reasons for this program.
Yeah, I think that, obviously, this team underachieved, and you know, if you were looking at it optimistically, you would mention what I did at the beginning, with which is you have all these people coming back. You know, you've got all this talent at your offensive skill positions coming back. You've got four offensive linemen off of a line that was playing better the last 3 weeks coming back. Plus your three best, I think three of your best, what, five defensive players are coming back, you know, for next season as well. And you would say, hey, they won two of their last three. And you can look forward to next year and say, okay, they won two of their next three. How do they build upon that? How do they find a way to get this offense on track in the offseason? Because, they scored, 39 points last game. It wasn't with your starter. It wasn't with the guy that you want leading this program. It wasn't with the guy that you want, you know, being the man for your football program. And the last two times that we saw Tommy DeVito, it didn't exactly seem like this coaching staff had a whole lot of confidence in him throwing the ball. Right? I mean, just like look no further than the box score to tell you that.
Yeah, and it's funny you should say that, because you just laid out the optimistic point of view. You could very, very easily take the pessimistic point of view and say, you know, you lose seven starters on that defense, a defense that really wasn't very good. It was supposed to be the strength of this team and gave up a lot of points and obviously lost its defensive coordinator, and that's a position that's up in the air going into next season.
Well,
but you lose seven starters.
Can I take that and in a weird way spin it, and I don't know if you agree with this. If you're going to change defensive coordinators, isn't it not exactly a bad time to do it when you're changing over more than half of your defensive starters? Because in one way or another, you've got to change the system, right? Like you will change that system because you're starting because you're bringing in a new coordinator, and you're now doing it with a majority of defensive starters who do not have game reps in this other thing.
I understand what you're saying, but if I'm a defensive coordinator coming in, would I prefer to have Alton Robinson and Kendall Coleman out there?
Of course I would.
Would I prefer to not be replacing, you know, your starting linebackers again?
Of course you would. Yeah,
right. So I understand what you're saying, that there is some benefit to making the change now. Again, you're putting the positive spin on it. You know,
I don't even necessarily agree with that.
Right.
But like,
you could say it, sure.
Right.
And like, you just did say it. And you're not wrong. But I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I think you look at the fact that you're losing seven starters on that side of the ball. Some big losses, too. In particular, Kendall Coleman and Alton Robinson. I know they didn't have the year that they wanted. But they're still two guys that are NFL caliber players, right? I mean, you're going to be surprised if you see either or both of those guys playing on Sundays in the
not-too-distant
future. I won't be. Sterling Hoffrichter, another guy who's going to be playing on Sundays.
Yep.
You lose him as well. You bring back four of your starters on the offensive line, as you pointed out. You lose Evan Adams. You bring back four starters. It is
an
offensive line that struggled.
Maybe you bring in that
kid from Florida. You could, right?
Who started eight games in the SEC this year.
And he was here visiting over the weekend. That is obviously, you know, it's a possibility, but it's a line that obviously struggled. To your point, though, we saw the offensive line get better. And wouldn't it be something if the biggest weakness of this year's team turns into a strength moving forward because now they have a year under their belt. They started to get better. Aaron Service back at left tackle. Maybe you found your center in Carlos Vettorello. It took a little while, but maybe you found your center. And maybe that makes all the difference with Tommy DeVito. Presumably a healthy Tommy DeVito going into the start of next season. He was clearly not healthy at the end of this year. Various bumps and bruises, and then apparently had his foot stepped on this week at practice, and that's why he didn't play very much on Saturday against Wake Forest. So there are a lot of question marks, Seth. And as you said, you could take the positive approach and the optimistic approach, or you could take that pessimistic approach. And it's going to be a long offseason for this program while, you know, fans around here hold their breath to see what 2020 is all about.
Yeah, and I don't blame you for taking the pessimistic approach, not just because of this year, but because of the last two decades. And, you know, you look at not only what Syracuse has done this season and not coming up and not living up to expectations, but really what they've done since 2001 in not living up to expectation and hope and hype. And when things go good, all of a sudden they disappear. Doug Marrone starts turning it around and leaves, you know, whatever else you might want to put into that basket. But I don't blame you for taking the pessimistic approach. If you're looking at this and you say, great, they won one more game. Okay. They still want 5-7. They still won half as many games as they won last year. I totally understand looking at this in the most pessimistic way possible.
How did they win this game on Saturday?
I have no idea.
When I look at the stats, you know, you see that Wake Forest had seven more first downs and outgained Syracuse, you know, easily in this game. Clayton Welch started instead of Tommy DeVito. I know the turnovers were a big deal, but Syracuse didn't really capitalize on those turnovers. Capitalized on the last one, obviously. Trill Williams, certainly made that one count.
They had what, three turnovers in the first half that they didn't score on?
They didn't convert. And
to be fair,
Jamie Newman was knocked out of the game too.
To be fair, one of the turnovers was an interception in the end zone.
Right.
So at least it took points off the board for Wake Forest, but they didn't score on it.
I'm just saying though that Wake Forest was able to move the ball. They had a lot more to play for. Syracuse had its backup quarterback in, failed to take advantage of the turnovers, penalized a dozen times again. I mean, penalties have been a problem all season long for this team. Again, you look at the final stat sheet, and you're thinking to yourself, how did Syracuse win this game? But they gutted it out, and it's something that we hadn't seen really to that point out of this particular group, right? I mean, they were close against NC State, couldn't get over the hump. Close against Pittsburgh, couldn't get over the hump. We saw a whole lot of lopsided losses, games that should have been closer than they were, and they just got out of hand, and they weren't mentally strong this year at times, but in the final game, for whatever reason, they were mentally strong, and they were able to play the role of spoiler.
Yeah, it's strange almost that now they were able to do that. That it took the 12th game for them to be able to win a game that not everything was going in their favor. And maybe it's a byproduct of having lost that Pittsburgh game, having lost that NC State game. I don't know. If this game was in October, I don't think they win it. You know, they did a lot of things that we saw them do all season long, and it led to losing. And for whatever reason, it worked. For whatever reason, it worked on Saturday. I would imagine that some of it has to do with the fact that the offensive line was significantly better than it was when they were down at NC State. It was significantly better than that game against Pittsburgh. And it's still not great. It's still not perfect. But, I mean, again, how many times do we talk about this? Just be bad. Like, just be a bad offensive line, and this offense could probably get some things going. Look at what they did the last 3 weeks running the ball. Just be a bad offensive line, and Mo Neal's going to be at or around 100 yards every game.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
They only gave up two sacks, and, you know, we said a couple weeks ago when they played Duke, I mean, Tommy DeVito only threw the ball, 15 times in that game? And we said, well, he barely threw the ball. And that was a reason they cut down on the sacks. But you look at how many times they threw it on Saturday, they threw the ball 39 times. Welch threw it 36 times. Tommy DeVito was 2 for 3. And we know that he wasn't mobile and he couldn't really run. So it was quick passes. But it'll be interesting when we have Mike Lynch on to ask him about the offensive line and what changed there. Because it really seemed to coincide with the move of Carlos Vettorello back to center and Aaron Service to left tackle. But was that it? I mean, was it just one change that led to, or was it, you know, the experience they gained throughout the season?
The combination of Bergeron and Vitorello moving inside.
Maybe. And having played for a whole year together and there was some cohesion. I don't know. I'm curious what Mike Lynn says, because there is no doubt that you look at the performance from the last 3 weeks, even though the final score didn't go their way against Louisville, you're right. The running game really got going. Mo Neal was fantastic. They
didn't
give up
many
sacks.
Kentucky ran for like 500 yards against Louisville over the weekend. Probably played into it.
That's fine, but Syracuse could not run the ball against anyone.
Right.
I mean, Syracuse struggled at times against Holy Cross early in the year, moving the ball. And I know they put up 41 points, but it was not a crisp, efficient effort. We saw these last 3 weeks, the offense, I thought, as a whole, kind of take a step forward, at least up front and with the running game. And so if you want to take the optimistic approach, I think that is a good sign that this offensive line seemed to come together. And as you said, you got four of the five guys coming back. We don't know what Sam Heckel's future is and with his injury, but you got Dakota Davis coming back, Aaron Service. You've got Bergeron coming back, Vitorello coming back, and you lose Evan Adams.
Mo Neal had three of his four best games the last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
He went for 115 and a touchdown against Duke, averaging nearly 7 yards a carry. He went for 163 and a touchdown against Louisville, averaging over 8 yards a carry, and he went for 98 and a touchdown, averaging about 5 yards a carry against Wake Forest. Those were three of his four best games.
Found the end zone in all three.
Yeah.
Great way for him to go out. He deserved it.
And he moved into ninth.
That's right.
On the all-time rushing list.
Yeah, he's top 10 all-time. I mean, what a career for Mo Neal. And one of those guys that just continued to get better from freshman year all the way through to leaving as a senior. Certainly a great career for Mo Neal. And he went out, at least individually, the way he should have, with three of his best games. Let's go to the phone lines at 315-437-7644. Dave in Syracuse kicking us off on the show today. Hey, Dave.
Hi, guys. I just got a comment that relative to the garbage take that you guys took on the program last week talking about the Wake Forest game. You did a nice job dumping on the game, dumping on its value, dumping on the whole thing for the seniors, the other players, the parents, the fans. The game certainly had its highs and lows, but you guys missed. And, hey, I hope there's an apology, because it was a great game for the seniors. Crazy game when you look at the stats. Great game for the seniors, the players, and the fans. I guess only you people. You probably didn't watch it because of what you you probably did the pregame.
Dave, let me ask you this. Dave, let me ask you this.
Hey, Dave. Okay, he's not going to stop playing.
Okay.
So I say you go. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, I don't take back the fact that I don't think that game mattered.
Me neither.
Is Dave still on with us? Dave, you still
there? Still on with you.
Okay, so if you could answer this question, what did that game mean to the program? Like five and seven versus 4-8. What does that mean?
Did you see Clayton Welch after the game?
Yeah.
Did you see his comments?
Yes. We talked last week about how it meant something to the seniors. Outside of the seniors, Dave, what did that game matter?
Well, listen, they had a good game. It was good for the fans. The fans probably felt great about it. They certainly had a good time at the game. You guys missed it. You probably should apologize to the people that maybe that didn't go or didn't listen.
Dave,
because of your
apologize for what? Apologize for what?
Your comments, which were of zero value in this game, turned out to be something to be proud of.
So, Dave,
darn right should be proud of. Guys, you were unrich in your comments. Garbage take. Have a nice day.
All right, you have a great day as well. So here's the thing.
I don't apologize for saying the game didn't matter.
I don't apologize either. And listen, I'm happy for the seniors, the way that they had a chance to go out. That is, it was a memory that they will have for the rest of their lives. In terms of the future of this program, does 4-8 versus 5-7 matter at all? To me, it doesn't. Once you lose out on bowl eligibility, it becomes about the seniors. Send them out with one more win. Maybe give yourselves a little momentum going into the offseason. But that's about it.
I don't buy the momentum thing either, coming off of last year. I mean, you should have had all the momentum in the world coming into this season. You didn't. But regardless of that, like I don't go back and look at what we said last week and disagree with what we said. I still don't think that game mattered. I think it's a nice moment for the seniors, but by and large, that game does not matter. It was a game that I think we were right to say, what do you have to play for? What do you have to get up for? The only thing there was sending the seniors out. There was not much else that you had to get up for in that game. And Syracuse managed to do it, knock off a team that, you know, is better than them, is going to a bowl game, and had probably not, but potentially an Orange Bowl or a high-level bowl on the line.
High-level bowl, certainly. I don't think they were going to the Orange Bowl either way. I think that belongs to, you know, whoever won the Virginia-Virginia Tech game, and Virginia obviously won that game and is going to the ACC title game. I think, I've been saying it all year, I think Virginia's the second-best team in the ACC, and I guess we'll find out just how good they are when they go up against Clemson and whether they have a shot in that game. But I think Virginia's probably getting the Orange Bowl invite. Wake Forest certainly is not now. And, you know, if you look at the projections, they're likely ending up in the Pinstripe Bowl, which for some, you know, maybe for them it's a big deal. I know it's kind of been there, done that for some Syracuse fans, but it is a nice bowl game. And, you know, I think they have to be pleased with their season to finish up 8-4. But you're right. I mean, they had Orange Bowl aspirations. The way they started this season, they certainly had Orange Bowl aspirations.
Yeah, I mean, they started the year, what, 6-0?
They were great. They were in the top 25.
I know that they lost Sage Surratt and Scotty Washington over the course of the season. They're two top receivers. But
that loss to Louisville took a lot out of their sails. To lose 62-59 at home in a game they felt like they should have won, I think that loss certainly took a lot out of their sails. But again, you know, Dave, we'd love to talk to you in the future, and if you'd like to convince us why 5-7 is a significant
why it matters to win five games,
significant development
four.
Over 4-8, we'd be happy to listen. But 315-437-7644, if you'd like to check in. Quick timeout. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Stephen, Seth back with you on a Monday edition of Orange Nation. We're brought to you by Drivers Village. 315-437-7644 is the number if you'd like to check in. And back to the phone lines we go. Stephen, North Syracuse up next on the show. Hey, Steve.
I'm going to agree with you on one point, and that is that what happened Saturday doesn't create any momentum for next year. Each team has to create its own identity and its own momentum each year, and we found that out this year. It's nice to go off into the off season with something positive, but the games next year will be decided by how well we play in the games next year. I listened to your take last week on this game, and I've got to say that the impression I got is that you were saying that there wasn't any reason to even show up for this game. There was no reason to even play it. And that bothered me a lot. And when I park in South Manly, when I park there, the lot was less than half full. And I've never seen it that empty for a game, so it seemed like a lot of fans had the same feeling about this. And when I went to the Dome, the crowd was so small, I started counting the number of people in different sections just to amuse myself. And I thought I was going to be watching the equivalent of the last Syracuse Chiefs or Syracuse Mets game of the year at the ballpark, you know, where everybody's swinging at every pitch because they want to get out of here. And that isn't what happened at all. The team was obviously saw a lot of meaning in this game and was really determined to come out and win it. And the fans, even though there were so few of them, were very enthusiastic. There were lots of cheering. You can make a lot of noise with far less than a capacity crowd in a dome. And that affected the game. And it was one of the best football games I've ever seen at the Dome. And I wound up really glad that I was there. And I felt really sorry for the people who didn't show up. And obviously there was meaning to playing this game, even if there's no carryover to next year, even though there's no bowl game. I think every game has a certain amount of meaning. If you look at the games across the country at all levels, there's all kinds of games that don't lead to bowls or playoffs or championships, but the players still come out and play them hard, and the fans still come out and root hard, and that gives it meaning to me.
Yeah, and Steve, I appreciate you calling. Don't put words in our mouth, though. I mean, we didn't say not to play the game. We said that outside of the seniors, we question how motivated the players would be. And the players came out and they showed us that they were very motivated to win that game. I was surprised by that. You know, we talked to Julian Wiggum last week. He said that he gets the 3-8 or the 3-9 and 4-8 seasons confused in his mind because it's all the same to him. So I was pleasantly surprised by what I saw out of the Orange. But yeah, we didn't say that the game shouldn't be played. We said in the grand scheme of things, does this
game
matter? What's
the motivation to get up?
And it was a great finish. It was a great game. I stand by that. In the grand scheme of things, to me, 5-7, 4-8 are much the same. Now, I will say this in terms of carryover. I agree that a team can't carry over momentum from one season to the next, or we would have saw it from last year to this year, right? I do think individuals, though, can carry over positive performances into their particular offseason, right? I mean, if you, like Jawhar Jordan, like he's going into the offseason.
I think he's feeling good about himself.
I think he's motivated. I think, you know, not that the other guys aren't motivated, but you know my point, is that Jawhar Jordan goes into the offseason feeling like, man, I can make a difference on this team. I had some good performances. I'm extra motivated now going into the offseason because I feel like I have a chance to play here and make an impact here, so on and so forth. Jarvion Howard, who came on strong towards the end of the season, I would imagine he goes into the offseason feeling like, man, I can't wait to get back at it next year. Tristan Jackson, so on and so forth. So I do think individuals can carry things over, you know, from the end of a regular season into the offseason. But I'm with you both in that for teams, I think it's much more difficult. Each team has its own identity, has its own leadership. I mean, we certainly saw that from last year to this year. The senior leadership changes. It's, you know, the team takes on a new identity. And so because of that, and because every year is different, it is hard to carry over, you know, team success. But I do think you can carry over individual success from a particular season into the offseason, into the spring, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible. Sure. There's no reason not why you can't. You know, if you're going to carry over the good, I would imagine that you've also got somebody like Tommy DeVito sitting there thinking about the season he just had for a couple of months here before spring ball really gets going. And I don't know that that's really beneficial for anybody. So, let's kind of see what happens when they get back on the field in the spring and then really when they get back on the field next August. But I guess in theory it leaves a good taste in your mouth. But I'll phrase it this way. Syracuse went 4-8 Dino Babers' first year. They had one cool win, and they got that speech, and it went viral, and everybody knew who Dino Babers was, right? They beat Virginia Tech. They go 4-8 year two. They beat Clemson. They're still the last team to beat Clemson. It's 2+ years later. They are the last team in the country to have beaten Clemson. That is incredible. Then they go and win 10 games last year. What'd they do this year? Like what'd they do this year? Okay, cool. They got that win on Trill Williams picking a pocket and for some reason not just falling over. He went and scored a touchdown. Okay. I'm not hanging my hat on that. You know, so, it's not like 5 years from now you're going to go remember and be like, "Hey, remember that happening?"
Right. So you, in other words, and again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in other words, each year you were building towards something, right? The Virginia Tech game, yes. It was your first signature win. And then the next year, you knocked off Clemson. And then the next year, you know, so on and so forth. You build up to 10-3. And now, whether you go 4-8 or 5-7, and we talked about this on the show last week, it was a step back. Regardless of them, how they won that game, it was a step back. They could have won that game 51-0. And it's still, this season would have been a step back. So again, we weren't saying not to play the game. We just said that it was...
Grand scheme of things.
Right. Grand scheme of things. You know, 10 years from now, you're not going to point to the 5-7 campaign and say, man, they, you know, because they won that Wake Forest game, it really helped them turn the corner the following year. You're going to look at the 10-3 season. Where do they go from that? Where do they go from that?
Don't you get the feeling this game might fall into the category of that weird pick game where, like, at some point down the road, you're like, remember when that happened? You know, like, you know, you don't say it in any like meaningful way. It doesn't matter. You're never going to think about it. But it's like, remember when Zach Mahoney scored 7 touchdowns in a game? Right. That happened.
Yeah. Clayton Welch came in and helped produce a 39-30 win. I mean, that play was memorable, right? The Trill Williams play. I mean, people will remember that play. I just don't know 5 years from now if they're going to remember this game at all and point to it with any significance. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Lenny in North Syracuse waiting for us here on hold. Hey, Lenny, how are you today?
Hey, not bad. First of all, I hope you guys had a nice holiday.
Same to you, Lenny. Same to you.
And the only thing I got to say is, I never thought I'd say this, but thank God for the football team, because certainly this weekend didn't really go the way I thought it would go. But
yeah, that was it was a rough trip to Brooklyn.
Guys, is this team the most penalized team in Syracuse history? Because I got to tell you, the penalties that all year long have killed this team. And I don't know if it's a discipline or what, but the other thing, at the end of the game, I don't know if you've seen where I think is Johnson shoved the referee.
Yeah.
There wasn't too much said about that, and I thought that was very undisciplined, and you should never lay your hands on a referee. I just want to know what you guys think about that.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. The refs made the right call. I mean, you cannot. That's a non-negotiable. That's crossing the line. That is going to get you kicked out every single time. So, without a doubt, you cannot do that. And I thought the referees. I was absolutely fine with the way that they handled that.
He
lost his head in the heat of the moment. And you can't touch a referee. So that's non-negotiable in terms of the penalties. You know, we thought the week before that, you know, and really the 2 weeks prior to that, the Duke game and the Louisville game, you know, all right, that, you know, that's moving in the right direction. And then just a ton of penalties again. I don't have the stats in front of me. I think it was 12, right? Didn't they have a dozen penalties against Wake Forest? It was at least a dozen for 12, over 100
they
yards.
They had 12 for 122 yards.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. And I know that they say it comes back to discipline. Okay, you know, why was that a particular problem for this team all season? I don't know. I don't know how you work on penalties, right, during practice.
I don't either. And we talked about this, I think at some point last week, where I kind of made the comparison to free throw shooting. You can go ahead and tell guys, hey, don't do that. Right? You can drill that into somebody's head as much as you want and as much as humanly possible. And you can have, you know, you can have somebody go out there and hit 100 free throws and they have to make 20 in a row during the 100. That doesn't mean they're going to do it when it matters. And, you know, you can say, hey, guys, don't jump early. It doesn't mean they're not going to and get called for a false start. And in fact, it probably means that they'll be a step late. You know, if they're really thinking about it, it probably means they'll be a step late, I mean, maybe, and then you get hurt. You know, so
as coaches, maybe you had consequences to it, right? And to cut down on it. Maybe you had some consequences at practice or, you know, following a game if, you know, you're flagged for such and such a penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct or a personal foul. You know, what's the punishment in practice? Running? I don't know. You got to do something, though, to cut back on the turnover or the penalties, rather, because just too many this year. They finished with 107 on the season. Florida State led the country as the most penalized team with 111. So Syracuse was four off of that. They were 127th in the country. Tulsa had 109. Cincinnati 110. Florida State 111. Syracuse fourth worst in that category in the country. Let's get one more quick phone call in this segment. Wayne in the truck up next on the show. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, guys. You know, I listen to you every day, and you didn't say anything wrong last week. You said everything right. Everything you said was accurate. I didn't go to the game. I made the choice to fix a roof, and I got halfway through the repair listening to the game and said, oh, crap, I got to go watch this on the TV. But 20,000 other fans made the same statement that I made. We were frustrated, and we chose to show our frustration by not going. And I love listening to Steve's thoughts, but I think he's off on this one.
Wayne, I got a question for you. Did you not go because of anything we or somebody else said on this radio station?
Okay, I'll make this clear. I did not go, not because of a couple of jabronis on the radio, but I did not go because I didn't want to go watch them get trounced by Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Cool, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and listen, Wayne, we appreciate you listening every day, and thanks for calling in. And I stand by what we said last week. I thought the team was going to have a hard time getting up for this particular game with nothing to play for, quote unquote, nothing to play for. And I know they wanted to send the seniors out in style, and they did that. Like they got the seniors one more win. They were motivated. I was wrong in that regard. I didn't think this team was going to come out motivated because at times, like you look at the BC game, BC is not that much better than Syracuse. I mean, they just fired their coach. Steve Adazio went 6-6. They just fired him over the weekend.
Yep.
Syracuse
they wanted
not...
to get to 6-6. They were on the high right. note getting to 6-6.
Syracuse should not have lost that game by 1,000 points, right? And there are several examples of that. So why did they turn around and beat a decent week Wake Forest team in the final game of the regular season when they didn't have a bowl on the line? I don't know.
Who knows?
It's that's kind of like the way it's been in the ACC this year, right? Well, I mean, how can we explain anything that's happened in this conference? We do need to take a timeout. Phone lines remain open. 315-437-7644. Back after this on ESPN Radio.